This is In the Circle on D1 Softball.
And we welcome you to this edition of In the Circle on D1 Softball. I'm Eric Lopez. Victor Anderson will join us later on the show. We got a lot to get to on this edition of In the Circle D1 Softball. Make sure you check us out on all your favorite places to listen to the podcast, including Good Pods, where we're in the top 30 for the month of April. Thank you for all of you that have been downloading and tuning in, making a one of a top podcast on Good Pods. And of course, check out D1 Softball for all the latest coverage. But I am here at the UCF Softball Complex recording this Sunday morning prior to Senior Day game between UCF and Oklahoma. And I'm sitting next to the man, the myth, the legend, the radio voice of the Oklahoma Sooners. He's literally setting up next to me here on the visiting booth here, Mr. Chris Plank. We've done this before, but now we get to do it in person, Chris.
There's always moments for history. This is a historic moment for me. And as a fan of what you and Victor do, this is awesome. You guys have been great hosts. This is a growing area. I got some grief from someone last night because they're like, you keep describing the field. You keep describing the scenery. We get it. I'm like, I don't think you do. You know, you look out, there's palm trees. There's the bounce house. Obviously, there's upgrades the Bear and you deserve here, and I hope they happen. But what a cool setting, man. I'm glad you guys are having me on before – well, I know we're talking in past tense somewhat, but before, a pretty big game today. Yeah,
we're going to talk about a historic game Saturday, which was a classic. But first, we've got your own booth. You've got an AC. We gave you food on Saturday, correct? So just give us an overall review of us hosting you here.
So thanks to the crew beyond the left field wall. For those that don't know and haven't been here, and I know, Eric, you've talked about it, but they have set up an area beyond left center, right center, and right where you can pull up and watch the game. You can be a fan, quote unquote, in the stands. And apparently you got some professional grillers out in left field because Thomas Breach ended up getting the burger. Thumbs up. I can't eat when I'm doing a game.
I'm like you. Don't worry.
I can have like a bar or something real quick or pound fruit chews or something, but I can't eat like a meal. But it was amazing, and the smells were awesome. And I'll say this. This is you don't need me to tell you this. Listeners of In the Circle know this from hearing you. This is a really good UCF team. Sarah Willis is incredible. You can't comprehend how good she is based on her numbers. If you just look at her numbers, you don't realize how deceptive she is. And, it's a credit to her and Kirsten Deal, who pitched an absolute gem, both of them, yesterday. And Oklahoma got one more big hit. I mean, literally one more big hit.
Let's get into that game, because I think that was a phenomenal softball game. Like, if you're a softball fan, that's what it's about. It's been sold out all weekend. And Kirsten Deal gets the ball Saturday against Sarah Willis. Couple of milestones in the game. Tiari Jennings hits her 90th career home run. 8th Division I softball player to ever do that. You'll hear my conversation with Tiari Jennings later on the program. Very modest, of course. She doesn't mention the record. She's just talking about the win and everything. That's a spoiler alert. But, man, what a phenomenal game. And I'm glad you brought up Sarah Willis, because I think a lot of people, maybe we knew how good Sarah Willis is, but I think a lot of people found that out Saturday with her performance. The first pitcher to hold Oklahoma to 2 hits and throw 7 inning complete game since 2022, Chris. I told you, we did a little bit of a radio pregame hit where I told you about her changeup, and Patty Gasso talked to her about it. They just had no answers for it.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, you're having a hold. I feel terrible you have an hold of mine. But Coach Gasso talked about it. You know, this team has struggled with the change of speed. I mean, you've seen it with, you know, who they played last week in Houston. You saw it with BYU. You know, last year it was just a number of pitchers, right? You would see a different pitcher every inning in some instances. And, you know, kudos to Texas Tech, Craig Snyder, and Lonnie Alameda at Florida State. They kind of invented that, if you will, last year, and big rosters due to COVID helped it out. But Oklahoma struggled with the off speed, and I don't know if I've seen any pitcher, Eric, that's more deceptive than Sarah Willis. I was in awe of her, you know, and I think a lot of Sooner fans were. It's so unique, her motion. You know, I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher that starts with the ball behind her back and then takes the glove to go get it. But she's a gem. And for Oklahoma, I think you feel better because of the way that it was pitched from Kirsten Deal, and seeing that it's not just kind of a midweek one-hit wonder to do this against a really good UCF team is promising. And I think it's a big day for Nicole May. You know, I think it's huge for her today. even though that's in the past now, as you guys listen.
We'll find out what we did later on. That's the beauty of radio and podcasting here. You mentioned Deal. It seems like she's taking it to a different level. I remember I watched one of your broadcasts. It was in OKC. They're playing Tulsa. And she threw, a no-hitter, I want to say, right? When you run-rolled them. And she's been a different pitcher to me. She pitched great against Houston. She won the Big 12 Pitcher of the Week. What's changed with her recently?
Well, I think it's confidence. I just think that she knows what she wants. And we talked to her post-game yesterday. I had never talked one-on-one with Kirsten Deal. Thomas Breach, our media relations guru, will have her do post-game. And I've never been able to be in those because we're in our post-game show. So she'll meet with the media. And you got to get her on the pod. She's amazing. I mean, I was blown away. And obviously, you just threw a two-hitter against, a tournament team. So you're feeling pretty good about things. But I was really impressed with how she handled herself. So number one, I would say maturity. She seems like she's getting more mature. Small things aren't breaking her down, right? Like a walk or falling behind in the count. She's hitting her spots. Jen Roach, I think, has a good feel for the opponents and how to call her pitches. And she's just, I mean, there's got to be that part of it where you step back and go, and yeah, she's got some dirty stuff. I mean, she was the number one recruit pitching-wise in the country, maybe even number one overall. And she's got a quirky personality. She's fun. And I think you've seen her embrace trusting her defense, see her embrace not trying to make every pitch perfect. And she just got a really good attitude out there. It's been one of the coolest developments so far this season to see her mature and develop the way she has.
She was fantastic. Let's talk about a couple of things. Let's talk about Tiara. You've covered her entire career, legendary career. By the way, this is the last, as we record this, this is a historic day in a lot of ways. It's senior day. Thanks for celebrating their seniors. They're going to celebrate, though, the Oklahoma seniors before the game. This is a historic class. Patty Gasso has mentioned she thinks this is the greatest senior class in college softball history. You've covered this class, mm-hmm. But let's talk about Tiara specifically because she hit her 90th career home run, as we mentioned, on Saturday. Describe what she's meant to this program and the type of player, because I feel like she gets under the radar because she had tough shoes because she almost had to follow Jocelyn Alo in a way, which is not fair.
Yeah.
Like, no one's Alo, but she's pretty darn good herself. She's one of the greats herself. So talk about her and making the move to shortstop this year.
Yeah, and it's funny because we were just – because I thought she had one of her better defensive games, Tiara Jennings, here on Saturday, and I was asking Coach Gasso about it. You know, Grace Lyons was a baseball player. You know, it was like you're watching Ozzie Smith out there, compact. You know, everything was just amazing in how she did it. Tiara's got longer levers. It's a little bit of a smoother kind of approach, and there's some people that just – you know, you long for the days of the Gold Glover. It's like, oh, there's some plays that Grace Lyons would have made that Tiara doesn't. Well, yeah, but there's also some plays because of her length that Tiara is making that Grace Lyons wouldn't. So she's been phenomenal in the shift to shortstop. I would almost say, Eric, that I think Tiara Jennings has been having to live in a shadow for a majority of her career and has done so to where you lay out her numbers to people and they're like, wait, what? She's possibly going to hit more home runs than Lauren Chamberlain and do it in 4 years. And if, you know, she's might have the all-time record for career runs batted in, because if you think about it, Jada Coleman was the most talked about recruit in that class, right? And it was, I remember talking to our coworker at the time, Jessica Cootie, who came out to do something during fall. And I was like, how good did Jada look? And she came out, she goes, and this was in 20, you know, their freshman year. So what, 2021?
Yeah.
She goes, well, she looked good. She looked great. But this Jennings girl is going to be something else. And she has been. You brought up Alo, right? Talks about home runs, talks about records, always in the shadow. So it's almost as if she is going to end up with one of the most amazing careers, not just in Sooner softball history, but maybe in the sport. And in some ways, even for the back-to-back-to-back national champs, it's kind of been a little bit under the radar. But I'm not saying it's unappreciated. I'm not saying that people dog on her. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just, you really sit down and you look at the numbers and you realize, wow, you know, this is incredible what she's done. And oh, by the way, 3 straight titles, you know, the biggest hits in a lot of those World Series games. I mean, I think back to the game she was having against Nash Kennedy last year, and she was just off. They walked Jada Coleman to pitch to her, and she ended up getting the biggest hit of the game. So she's got a great family too, dude. I mean, I know I could sit here and Team me up on Tiare and I can talk all day, all right? I mean, I just, she's a good person. She's a good kid. She's a hard worker. Her parents, you know, Nacio has become a great friend. Her mom, Maria, will go and watch travel ball games of her teammates and her friends in Texas, and just to be there to support him when she's here. Her aunt, her cousins, just all great people. And her sister is doing great things at San Diego right now, and I'm excited to follow, you know, her Jennings part two over the next few years. But I think she's going to be one of the most missed players we've ever had. And there might be more people to get shines. There might be a few more award winners, but I don't think anyone's going to have the impact that Tiare did. She's special.
Fantastic representation, too, of the program. I mean, yeah. I got to talk to her on and off the air yesterday, Saturday at the game, and just a great, well-spoken, super smart.
And she's a star of few words.
Yes.
Did you even get 2 minutes out of the interview?
No.
Okay.
No, she's very efficient.
She's very efficient in it, but that's her, and that's who she is. And I'm willing to bet after she decides that she's done with her, you know, professional softball career, I think you've got, you know, 2 to 3 people on this team that could be working with you and working with me on ESPN and ESPN Plus broadcasts. I mean, Tiare is incredible. Nicole May is, and I would put May and Maxwell in the same conversation.
Sure.
Surgical, right? And then you got the personality of Tiare, where I think she's such a student of the game that's going to be the kind of analysis that we want looking forward. So she's going to have a great pro career, and she's going to be able to do whatever she wants. But I hope someday we get her in the media, because I think she'll be a valued asset.
I can endorse that. I mean, talking to her, she's fantastic, and we'll play that clip. Which you'd also find on the social media platforms on D1 Sup on In the Circle with Tiare Jennings there later on. Patty Gasso wins her 1,500th game on Saturday. Cool. It's kind of cool. You got to call it. I got to call it on the ESPN Plus, so we both get to share that history. But you were the first and only person to get to talk to her first, non-coach player, let's just say, about it, because you did the post-game interview live on the field, which, by the way, blew me away. But that was a cool moment. That's a historic moment, Chris. Like, you're going to probably – that's going to be right on your – Mount Rushmore moments of your career there. But what did that mark mean to Patty? Because she doesn't like talking about it, but you've covered her as well as anybody. Third head coach ever to do 1,500 wins in Division I history.
Honestly, and I'm not just saying this, it's funny, as we talk about this, Patty, Coach Gasso is walking, we're in the press box, she's walking behind home plate to the hitting cages with her director of ops, Jackie Livingston. And just a side note, you know, Jackie, JT, and I all started the same year in 16 together, 2016. It's been a pretty good run since then, but I think we can't talk about OU softball without talking about Jackie Livingston, because she's really the glue that holds everything together. You know, director of ops, man, most underappreciated job in all of sports, and we've got great ones at Oklahoma, and none better than Jackie, and Ryan Gaines does a great job at baseball. But what does 1,500 mean to Patty Gasso? I don't know. I mean, I'm being serious when I say that. I know it means a lot to her, because it means she's had a lot of success. I also think that I've always had this philosophy to where there's some people like, this is my 10th year doing this, and I did it 1 year, or I've been doing this thing for 14 years. And I think in my mind, it just reminds me I'm getting old, right? It's like, I've done this, and someone's going to realize, man, he's been doing this for too long or something, whatever. I think for Coach Gasso, she looks at it in a different way. 1,500 wins, but how many lives were impacted in those 1,500 wins? How many girls became women? How many players that you just didn't know what they were going to be when they came into high school as people, or came out of high school as people, developed into, you know, God-fearing, productive members of society, right? I mean, it's just that, to me, is what I think matters most to Coach, is those lives that she's changed. But there's going to be a time where I'm sure she sits down when all this is done, and, you know, not only to have the 1,500 wins, but all 1,500 of them coming at Oklahoma. I mean, it was funny. Eric and I were Googling the same thing yesterday, just checking it. And it was one of those moments to where, I guess it doesn't register sometimes that she came from a community college.
Correct.
Correct. Right? I mean, can you imagine that in today's sport, Oklahoma going and hiring a kid fresh out of community college that had a kid and was pregnant with another, right? I mean, it's just, it's amazing. Actually, she's pregnant with JT. DJ came in 2000, a little bit later on. But it's, I don't know, man. It's just, it's wild, right? And I always thought, you know, looking back on those community college days, how that formed who she was. She tells this great story. When she, her very first coaching job was as a JV girls basketball coach. And she got teed up. And the ref threw her out of the game. Or the ref argued with her. And she's like, this is ridiculous. You can't call that. How dare you? And the ref turned to her, threw her out of the game, and said, you need to calm down. This is just a girls' basketball game. And from that moment forward, she A, realized she couldn't be a basketball coach because she'd get too many tees. But number two, I think that really – I mean, she talks about it today at different – I think it really drove her to say, hey, girls/women's sports matter. They deserve your focus and not just, hey, I'm here because I'm getting paid. From umpires to grounds crew to everyone involved – she expects this to be treated as the biggest deal and not, hey, it's just a bunch of girls playing basketball or softball or whatever. So to me, 1500 matters a lot, and that's a long way to get to this point. I think the impact on the game and the impact on people will always be something that means more to her. But how cool was it to be here with you to have it happen here? I know you wanted UCF to win, and I think most of college softball probably did. But to see it, to be here, to have it happen in the final road trip on the Big 12 is pretty cool.
It was. And I saw her, like, with so many flocking OU fans, taking the time to talk to them and taking photos with them.
How crazy is that, right? I mean, there are, as we knock this out on Sunday morning, there's a line that's wrapped around of Sooner fans. Even in Orlando, it's some fans that live maybe even, you know, in Atlanta or in the areas I've heard from that, hey, this is as close as they're going to get. So I came down here. And it's funny, the throngs of fans is so cool to see, but it can become overbearing sometimes. And so they try to, you know, be very calculated about when they do autographs and things. And I always love it because as calculated as they are, there'll always be like a little girl or two, and Coach Gasso sees her, and she's like, I'm coming over there.
She does. That's exactly what she did. I saw it up close. And I said this on the broadcast this weekend, because there's a lot of new Oklahoma young fans that have joined in very recently that freak out when they lose a game, the world is ending. And I try to remind people on the broadcast this weekend, before Patty Gasso got here, Oklahoma only made the NCAA tournament like once.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, and I deal with that a lot on my local show in Norman on the Ref, because I do think there are people like you and I that, and again, me, who didn't really know a lot about softball. And then I took the job to be their play-by-play guy and travel with them. And you fall in love with the sport, right? You fall in love with the intricacies. You fall in love with the battles. You fall in love with the coaches and the players. And then you want to follow their careers and their lives. So there's people like us who watch this sport and just fall for it. And then there's others who watch it because their team is good. And it's their badge that our team just won, and I know just enough about this sport to be dangerous, and I'm going to crush someone. And I think part of the allure of some fans to Oklahoma Sooner softball within the Sooner Nation is its dominance, right? They're just dominating. And, I mean, they won 70 in a row, right? I mean, it's just three straight national titles. What is it now, five in the last six, 7 years? It's 8 years. So I always fight that, you know. It's like, hey, this is more normal. What's happening this year? This
absolutely
is what
100%.
This is softball, yes, man. This is what happens. But I think most people get it, and it's really cool for me as someone who has done sports radio for an infinite amount of time, it seems now, to be able to come in on a Monday morning after a series and know in my 3-hour show I could probably fill it talking 3 hours of softball. That's where the passion is for OU right now, and it's really cool to see.
No doubt about that. Two quick things before we let you go. UCF, this is their first year in the Big 12. You've seen the Big 12 as close as anybody the last decade. They're in the first year, hopefully to make in the tournament for the fourth straight year in the tournament. They're in the middle of the pack of the Big 12. They're going to be playing in Hall of Fame Stadium in 2 weeks for the first time in program history in OKC in the Big 12 tournament. That's going to be huge. What advice would you give UCF to being successful in the Big 12, whether it's, you know, Coach Ball Malone or players or the administration, fans, what would you say to UCF? What advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, I would, you know, knock on the administration's door and say, let's fund this the right way. This is a beautiful area. This is a robust recruiting community. let's get NIL where it needs to be for UCF. And I understand, listen, we struggle with it at OU, so I can't even imagine what it's like at some of the other places across college softball in just trying to get those NIL funds where they need to be. So I would work hard on that. But I feel like there can be more done here for Bear. I really do. She's really good, Eric. I mean, Cindy Ball Malone is really good. I'm sitting here. I got my scorebook out, and I'm name dropping you like crazy on this, Thomas. I hope you appreciate it.
Thomas, getting a lot of plugs here,
appreciate
man.
But I'm sitting here with Thomas, and I got the lineup card, and all of a sudden, someone's out there that wasn't even the lineup card, and the person that was pitching is what now in the flex. I'm like, how? So she's a wizard, and she's, obviously. You got your coach right, is what I would say. And I know that, you know, there is always going to be that battle because I look beyond the center field wall and there's that awesome stadium and football is always going to pay the bills. And I completely and totally understand that. But this right, there are a lot of UCF fans here. There's a lot of UCF fans here. And I think there could be even more. So I would just continued investment. Listen to your coach. I think she knows what's going on because there's great players from the high school ranks. You've seen her develop. I mean, Sarah Willis is one of the coolest development stories in the history of the transfer portal, right? Bring her back home. Maybe this becomes a place where players go somewhere else for a year or two and she brings them back home to Florida. But the Big 12 is going to be so fun because of the unknown, right? Arizona and Arizona State are coming in. And both are in a weird place, right? I mean, is Arizona going to be able to meet what Mike Candrea did, or is it going to be too hard to get back there? Where is Arizona State? I think I heard you talking about ASU a while back and kind of their rebuilding path. I mean, Utah has been to the World Series as recently as any
last year.
Yeah, as recently as any of the teams that are coming in. So I just – I think UCF and Oklahoma State have a really good chance to be the two big dogs of this conference. I really do. And I hope and I pray that there is the continued commitment to make sure that it gets the resources necessary to it. And I feel like, Eric, you talk to a lot of coaches, right? And you travel a lot. I feel like that's the overriding question for everyone. But our concern and request. But to me, you've got the evidence that it works. You know, Cindy Ball Malone has done an incredible job here in showing you, hey, I can win. I can host a regional. We can get to a super regional, right? We can do that. And I think it's just a matter of time before they're one of the final eight in Oklahoma City if they continue that commitment.
Yeah, I know that's our goal moving forward. Last thing before I let you go, obviously it's been a historic year in the Big 12. It's been well documented, the comings and goings of the league. And a big chapter next weekend, the final bedlam as conference rivals. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, we have no idea what's going to happen down the road. I'm not going to ask you about that.
No,
but what is the state? What's the state's mood when it comes to this Bedlam matchup, which has become a huge series nationally from a television set? It's now become one of the most watched games year-round. Bedlam 2024 could be the final chapter that we know of, at least, for Oklahoma State in softball.
Yeah, I think they'll still play. Okay, and I don't know if it'll be next year. Baseball's going to play next year. So we know that Skip Johnson, the head coach of the OU baseball team, and Josh Holliday have talked about that. So they'll still play next year. But I love what it's become. You know, and I kind of like that every year there's something a little bit more chippy that adds to the rivalry. I think Kenny Gajewski has been great for softball. I really do. And, you know, here's a guy who has an incredible backstory that started at Oklahoma as a member that won a national championship in baseball at OU. And he's, you know, it was transfer U with Samantha Shaw and some of those stars. And now he's gone about a little bit different. Obviously, Lexi Kilfoyle, big-time recruit they got from Alabama. But, you know, they've started to rely on a few youngsters. And, you know, they've been a little bit more selective in the transfer portal. I think it's going to be a heck of a series next week, and I really do. And I'll add this. I hope they play forever. You know, I brought up every year something happens. There was, a few years ago where this series was Oklahoma City for one game and then two at the home site. And then I think it was 2020. It was Jada's first year when Kenny Gajewski's like, no, we need to play all three games on our home field. Well, I mean, in that moment, it's like, okay, let's go. And now, you know, it's going to be a scene next week. And I just hope we had crazy weather last night in Oklahoma. It looks good for next week, but it's going to be fun, man. It'll be a fun series. And I do think they'll inevitably play each other in the non-conference.
Yeah, that'd be great for the sport of softball if that continues. All right, that's Chris Plank, radio voice of Oklahoma. Just go ahead, plug everything, because you're on the air a lot.
Yeah. So, listen, we do a daily show, 9 to noon. It's on KREF. If you go download our app, we talk a lot of softball. Coach JT and Coach JT Gasso comes on quite a bit with us. Sooner Sports Podcast is kind of on, I don't want to say a hiatus, it's just a little bit more selective. I live on Twitter too much. In fact, I spent way too much time on Twitter talking about Gators. You guys have Gators around here.
Yes.
Ugh, so give me a follow at Plank Show, and we'll talk softball, man. It should be fun.
Should be a lot of fun, Chris. Thanks for doing this. I'll probably return the favor in a couple weeks when I'm in your backyard.
Yeah.
Okay, see, that's Chris Plank joining us here from the press box here at the UCF Softball Complex here on Senior Day. Coming up here, you're going to hear my quick conversation with Tiari Jennings, Vic. And then, Vic, you're going to tell us what's going on the rest of the show here on In the Circle.
That I do plan on doing, my friend. Thanks, as always, to Chris Plank for joining us and having a conversation about the Sooners in their quest for an unprecedented four straight national championship. I'm going to have to ask Eric a couple of questions about the Sunday game when he joins me back in the studios. Do the magic of producing and editing later on in the show. We're also going to talk about some of the significant results that took place this past weekend in softball, including Arkansas making a push to be potentially a top 8 seed, and what's the story going on with LSU. But coming up shortly, we're going to head our way to the Missouri Valley Conference, where Southern Illinois is in prime position to win the regular season championship. And two of the big reasons the Salukis are in that position will join us shortly. They're sisters and a dang good softball players. Medea and Ryland Groff from Southern Illinois will be joining us coming up shortly on this edition of In the Circle. Now, we know we're getting close to the postseason. That's why you need to get your subscription to D1Softball.com. That way you can access Eric Lopez's latest Racketology that's going to come out weekly and will be increasing in frequency as the postseason gets closer. So you can know the bubble watch of who's in and who's out. And you can also get all of the greatest stats from the DSR courtesy of our friends at 643 Charts. Go to D1Softball.com, get your annual subscription, use the promo code CIRCLE25, and you get 25% off your annual subscription to D1Softball. Again, D1Softball.com. Promo code CIRCLE25. Use the code, ladies and gentlemen. The one code that people have been trying to crack and have not done so with much success this season has been Southern Illinois. The Salukis, fresh off a dominant sweep this past weekend versus Indiana State, outscoring the Sycamores 29-1, has Southern Illinois in the catbird seat to win the Missouri Valley regular season championship and get the number one seed in the conference tournament, which will start in 2 weeks. Two of the biggest reasons why they're in that position caught up with Eric Lopez this season. They got on the map nationally after an opening weekend performance, and they have not slowed down ever since. Of course, we're talking about the sister act of the Salukis, Ryland and Medea Groff. Medea, the pitcher, a phenomenal sensation. If she ain't an All-American, I'm going to be rioting. I'm sure some Saluki fans will feel the same. And Ryland, who's been a steady backstop, but also provides some nice swings and productivity at the plate. Eric Lopez had a chance to catch up with them this past week prior to that series versus Illinois State, talking about their season so far and what got them to Carbondale and being a part of Jen Sewell's team. Here now, the sisters, Ryland and Medea Groff, in the circle on D1 Softball.
All right, joining us now, they are part of the great tandem pitcher-catcher there for Southern Illinois, who's on top of the Missouri Valley Conference. We're talking about one of the top freshman pitchers in the country, Medea Groff, and her twin sister, her catcher, Ryland Groff, joining us here on In the Circle on D1 Softball. How you both doing?
Good.
We're good.
Thank you for having us.
Well, let's talk about first this season. How would you describe your freshman season here, or on top of the league as we record this? How does it feel right now? You're coming off a big sweep against Belmont as we record this, or at top of the league. What's this season been like?
Honestly, it's just been super fun to get to know all the girls. Southern Illinois is definitely out of our little Nebraska bubble. So just getting to know everybody and kind of just experience something new completely has been super fun. And obviously anytime that you're doing well as a team, that makes it even more fun.
Yeah, I'd say this season has been a blast. Like, kind of going in, you don't always have a ton of expectations, but like this season has exceeded my expectation both on the field and off the field, and I just feel very lucky to be a part of it.
Describe this team for those that maybe haven't seen your team play. How would you describe this team? Starting with you, Maddie.
I would say we fight. Like, we're fighters. Even if, you know, we're down, we're not out of the game at all. I just think we're a fun team and we don't take the game, like, we have a good balance between being serious and having fun. And I don't think that even in a serious series like Belmont, it's not lost on us that it's still a game and still to have fun. So I would just say we're fighters, but we also can have fun.
Yeah, I would definitely say this team is a lot of fun, you know, always laughing, but then we're also very competitive and we never count ourselves out. Like, when we hit a bump in the road or, you know, something doesn't go right, we're very quick to be able to switch it and to keep going and battle back. And, yeah, I think this team has a lot of grit, and it's just – it's a lot of fun to be part of it.
I'll start with you, Ryland. Was there a moment this season where, A, you thought, man, this team is really, really good. We could do some – have a great year. And, B – was there a moment where you both felt like, hey, we belong here at this level, we could succeed?
I honestly, going in, I knew what, like, we'd been following the team before we came here, and just we knew what all the girls were capable of. And I feel like the minute we came here, we were like, yeah, this team can do something really cool. So I don't feel like it's a specific moment, but I just think we've always kind of had that confidence in this team, and just as the season goes, we just have more and more confidence.
Who are the leaders on this team that you've kind of leaned on, who's maybe taking you both under your wing?
I would say for sure we have 8 seniors on the team, so there's a lot of upperclassmen to follow. But I would say a cool thing about this team is that the leadership doesn't just come through vocal and just being loud. We have some of that, but I feel like great teams, they have a mix of that and just like showing by example and leading by example. So Riley Hamilton, she's the name. If you say leader, that's who everyone is going to name. So she's just been instrumental, I think, in just keeping this team chemistry and culture together throughout the entire season. I've loved getting to work with Maddie Eberle and Hannah Hockerman. They're 2 senior pitchers, and they've really just invited me into the bullpen and all of that. So I feel like I've kind of formed just a really deep connection with them, just being pitchers, but also just off the field as well.
Yeah, I would say this team has a lot of leaders on it, and like regardless of the class that they're in, they've all been super welcoming. Like Maddie said, you know, Riley Hamilton and a lot of the seniors have done a great job leading this team. But I'll even say, like, Anna Carter's done a great job with me, like, welcoming me into the, like, catcher position and just showing me how we do everything in practice and day-to-day. But I could point to almost any girl, like, I could point to any girl on this team, and they've somehow been a leader in some way or just been super welcoming. And so that's really fun when you have, you know, 22 girls doing that.
Maddie, speak of the rest of the pitchers. You mentioned a couple of the seniors there, but speak of the whole pitching staff, how you all complement each other, and maybe some advice they've given you throughout the season.
I think anytime you're on a team, there's always teams within a team. And so the pitching staff and even the catchers, we call it the P's and C's. I think that, you know, we just spend so much time together in the bullpen and all of those things, and we just kind of have a deeper understanding of what it takes to be a pitcher and just like everything that we've done a little bit to get here. And so I think simply just from that being our position, you kind of just bond over that. And then on top of that, just they, Maddie Eberle and Hannah Hockerman, and then we have Kiana and then Elliot, who is hurt right now. I would say just as a whole, we've made it very clear from the beginning that we're doing it together, and it's not one over the other. It's everybody collectively giving their piece of the puzzle to make a good staff and an effective staff.
And then, Ryland, speak to what's it like to be part of this offense and a balanced offensive tack. And certainly a lot of people that know Jackie Liss, who's been on, was I think on the top 100 D1 softball best players list, has done incredible throughout her career, leads the team at homers once again. But speak of this offense led by Jackie Liss.
Honestly, it's just amazing and super fun to, like, watch. I learned so much just by watching, like, the girls in practice, and I just think it's super impressive what they do and how they compete at the plate. And I look up to them so much and how they compete at the plate, and I'm just trying to emulate that in any way I can or just anything like that. But I've learned a ton just by watching them and seeing what they're doing. And yeah, it's super impressive and super cool.
Let's talk a little bit about both of you now. You're both twins, correct? So just tell us first the backstory for those that may not be aware on how far separated were you as far as what were you like as twins as you were born and growing up?
You want to take it?
Sure. Okay. I'd say honestly, we've done everything together. You know, we've never played on a softball team that's been different from each other. We've always been teammates. We've always kind of been interested in the same stuff. And yes, we're sisters, but we're also like each other's best friend, which has been super cool. But yeah, we've just grown up together, kind of done a lot of stuff together, and it's just kind of worked out nicely like that.
It sounds silly, but I promise it's true.
Who's the oldest of the two?
I am.
How older? How much older? We talking minutes?
Just a minute.
Wow! Do you have bragging rights? Do you bring that up? Okay, so you bring that up that, hey, I'm the older one. Anytime there's an argument. Okay, fair. I think you should. Call that calling card. You mentioned you both are from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yep.
So just take me through, what got you both interested in softball?
We've honestly just been playing softball since we were about 4 years old. My mom actually played baseball at Regis University because they didn't have a softball program yet. And so just since we were little, they always had us throwing and catching and all of that stuff. So a lot of inspiration from my mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just started playing t-ball when we were little, and then it became coach pitch and then travel ball. And from there,
the rest is history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite athlete or softball player growing up?
I would cling to the Jenny Finches, the Kat Ostermans, the Lisa Fernandez, you know. I remember I had Jenny Finch's book and I read that thing probably like three times. I loved it. So I would have to say Jenny Finch probably.
That's a good question. I remember like I really liked watching Amanda Chittister when she played. When I was little, I just watched any catchers, and I thought they were just the coolest people ever. I just loved watching them.
That figures there. Very good. And, yeah, Kat Ostermann, Jenny Finch, that's a good combo for pitchers there.
Yeah.
A little bit. How did you both end up at Southern Illinois? What take us through that process, that decision, and what attracted you to come to SIU?
So just during the recruiting process, we'd been emailing the coaches and stuff, and then we were lucky enough to come on a visit here, and it just felt like the perfect fit. Like, we got a chance to kind of go somewhere a little bit farther away, which was cool, and something different, and then just, like, we were just drawn to the team, honestly. Like, you could tell this was a really cool place to be and somewhere that we would, like, be honored to play for, and it just had everything that we were looking for and was the perfect fit for us. But I'd say it's definitely like just the feel of the team that really, really drew me in. And Yeah. So it was just the perfect fit, and we were lucky enough to go together. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll echo that just a little bit, but definitely having the opportunity to go somewhere and compete together, I think it just would have been a pretty hard transition to college and being separated. So that was a huge thing. And then, like Ryland said, we got to watch a few of their games here, and you can just tell how they competed, that just like the gritty, like almost pesky attitude that just makes every game you're playing fun. So who wouldn't want to play for a team like that? Who wouldn't want to play for a program like that?
What's it like playing for Coach Sewell?
It's awesome. Like, we've learned a lot. At least I'll speak for myself, just learning a lot with just different parts of the game, but it's been super enjoyable.
Yeah. They provide me and Ryland with a lot of help, with Ryland calling pitches for me. So they'll give us those charts, you know, the background and scout on certain lineups that we're about to face that week. So that's just been a huge thing behind the scenes that not only saves us a lot of time, but just like helps us in the middle of the game. And so just being able to talk through, you know, how we're going to approach certain hitters that are strong in a certain lineup. So we've definitely been utilizing their brains a lot this season.
You remember the first time you got to talk to her? You got to know her on campus, maybe on your first visit or something like that?
So we were actually recruited by Coach Blaylock, who recently stepped down.
Sure.
So she was the main one who recruited us, but we did get to talk, obviously, with Coach Sewell as she was the assistant head coach. So she, you know, took us different places around campus on our visit and everything. And you could just tell that, you know, she was telling us about how she used to powerlift and all that stuff. And I mean, just being people who like the weight room and
yeah.
All of that stuff, that was very appealing to us. And she just seemed really knowledgeable on the game of softball.
That's pretty good. And it's right, Coach Blaylock, a legend in herself. She's still around, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What have you been able to interact with her here, and how she's enjoying life after coaching?
Yeah, we've been able to, like, get breakfast with her and stuff. And she's been, you know, always supporting us and the whole team. But yeah, I think she's doing really good and enjoying everything. But yeah, I think it's super cool how she still is, you know, sending those supportive texts to the team and stuff like that. So it's just been amazing to still have her just in the team's corner rooting for us.
Now, you mentioned, Ryland, you're calling pitches during the game, which is old school. I like that. So take us through that process, Ryland, how that works on the game plan and how you work with the coaches there, and then call the pitches there with your sister.
Yeah, so the coaches, you know, a few days before we play a series or something, they'll give me a whole scouting report on the hitters and just kind of what they're looking at with what the hitters can do and stuff. And so I obviously take all of that into a lot of considerations because it's super helpful, and they spend a lot of time, you know, watching film and getting that ready. And so I use that, and it's just a mix of throwing to the hitter's weaknesses but also to Maddie's strengths. So it's just mixing that in, and I'm constantly in between innings talking to Katie, talking to Jen about kind of how we want to go about just the pitch calling and stuff, and they've been awesome with it. And then obviously I'm constantly talking to Maddie about it, and yeah, it's just a really collaborative effort, and we're just trying to do like I said, throw what Maddie is, you know, her strengths and stuff, but also keeping in mind the situation and the hitter.
Maddie, tell me your role in all this. I mean, do you get to shake off your sister from time to time? How does it work from your end?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much free reign. So I will shake her. It doesn't happen very often because, like I said, we're constantly communicating, even in the middle of game, in the middle of an inning. So, yep, I can't shake if I feel the need and nobody's ego is hurt.
So what's that like? If you two disagree, well, how does that go? Is there how does that work play out? Who wins that? What do you do, Ryland, if she disagrees with a call?
Ultimately, she's the one throwing the pitch. So I'm going with what she, like, if I call something she doesn't like, that's totally fine. We're going to go with what she's comfortable with, and then we can talk about it after whatever, but I'm never going to get upset if she shakes me off at all. She's the one who has to throw the pitch. So
But if it goes, if it doesn't go well, you're going to remind her that it didn't go well, right? Is that how that works?
I might give her a hard time, but, you know.
I figured.
Yep.
Is it different catching her? How old have you, I mean, I'm assuming you've caught her, like, growing up, right? How long have you been catching her?
I've been catching her since she started pitching, so I don't know how
long. Eight years old, maybe.
Yeah.
So is it different catching her than the other pitchers on the staff? Because you know her so well, you know her inside out. Is it different or not? Or is it not that as different as people might think?
I mean, I'd say it's just a little different because, like, with Madia, I feel like I could catch her with my eyes closed. Like, I, you know, I'm just really used to exactly the way her pitches move and everything. But, I mean, you know, catching is catching, and there's obviously going to be similarities no matter who you're catching or who the pitcher is. But, I mean, just because I've caught Madia so long, there's just that, you know, it's, yeah. But, yeah, catching is catching, and I think, and you know, it's kind of the same with most pitchers, just a little different, but yeah.
Maddie, is it different when somebody else catches you and it's not Rylan, or what's that like for you?
It's a little different. Honestly, I haven't even had to do that a lot, to be honest. All through club, she's just been my catcher. And then even here in bullpens, usually she's my catcher aside from maybe a handful of times. And obviously every catcher here is very high level, so they do it just fine. But yeah, there's definitely a comfort factor whenever I'm thrown to her.
Well, and it's not uncommon for pitchers to have a personal catcher. Kat Osterman used to have Megan Willis for a long time at Tech is a catcher. Monica Abbott had Shannon Dupking. So this is nothing new. It's just the difference is you're both related. That's the only difference.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Rylan, do you know Rylan right away when she's on her game or when she's off her game?
Honestly, I wouldn't say there's ever times when I'm like, oh, she's really off. Like, if anything, it's such a minor thing, if I'm being honest. But I would say, yes, we've been doing this for so long. I do pick up on the little stuff. But like I said, you know, Maddie is always going to go out there and give it the best she's got. So I never am worried about that.
How are you two different personality wise, if at all? How would people differentiate from a personality standpoint?
Ooh, this is hard to answer, like, introspective. I would say, I mean, personally, I think she's loud, but other people describe her as quiet. So it might just be, like, the dynamic, but I would say maybe I'm a little bit more outgoing. I don't know if you would agree with that, but.
Yeah, I'd probably say so. I guess I'm really loud around Maddie, but.
Yeah.
Honestly,
of course, you're going to be louder on your sister. Of course, you're going to be a lot louder on your sister.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I feel like maybe that. Honestly, we're pretty similar. We're pretty similar. We have, like, the exact same sense of humor. So we think we're really funny.
That's good. Could be a combo there, right? Like a kind of a comedy act?
Yes.
I think I read somewhere, and that you wanted to come here to make a difference and put not only Southern Illinois, but all of mid-major college softball on the map, if you will. Just talk about the, you know, part of that. That's one of your goals. It is to put Southern Illinois on a national map. They've had a lot of success, but really make it a note that you both want to help and contribute that. Just to kind of expand on that. Is that accurate, what was said?
Yeah.
Yes, I'd say that's accurate.
I would say just having played preseason and getting to kind of just play around and you know, compete with some of those power fives and everything, I've really realized that the level at D1, it's very relative, and that there's so much good softball happening all across the country in so many different conferences that honestly you just don't hear about a lot. And so that's just been really eye-opening to me. Like, you're you know, playing these teams, beating these teams that have gone and played these other huge teams and had success. So it just all feels very very relative and just connected kind of with mm-hmm. the level of D1, I would say.
Yeah, and I'd say it kind of feels just like the gap between, like, mid-majors and Power Fives. Like, you know, I feel like it slowly closes, and it's just, I mean, softball, any day, anyone can be anyone, but it's just been super cool to play for a mid-major and just see how we can compete against anyone in the country.
Plus, it inspires a lot of young players, right? That, hey, you don't have to go to a big program. You could go to a, quote, mid-major, make a name for yourself, and raise the profile of those programs. Is that also part of it?
Yeah. I definitely think the, you know, concept of Power Five or nothing, or, like, that type of thing, I don't think that's necessarily healthy for to be preaching to girls going through the recruiting process, just because that's not the reality for a lot of girls out there. And there's so many, you know, amazing experiences and opportunities to be had at mid-majors.
What's your interest outside of softball for each of you?
I'm a reader. Yeah. So that's probably my biggest thing.
What do you like reading? What you reading?
I read quite a bit of, like, nonfiction-y, sometimes self-help, but honestly, I'm all across the board, nonfiction or fiction usually.
Yeah, I honestly enjoy, like, working out, but one thing that a lot of the girls on the team do is we like to go, like, play games, whether it's, like, pickleball or basketball or just anything just to have fun. We've been playing hacky sack a lot with the team, just, like, stuff like that, just fun games.
How competitive do you two get with each other? Do you play other sports against each other, or what's that like, or what?
Yeah, we get competitive.
I would say we're pretty competitive.
What's the most competitive thing you two get into? Like, what's the thing where you get the most passionate competition or argument about?
Well, I would say, I don't know if this counts, but we would go for runs or do sprints occasionally at home, and that just that isn't it. It's good because it pushes us, but man,
yeah,
there's some,
yeah, I feel like running or like lifting is a good one. Just always wanting to lift as much as the other person. We're pretty competitive with that stuff, but it makes it fun and yeah, pushes us. I think it's good.
Who's the comedian on the team?
Honestly, everyone is so funny, but if I had to pick, it would honestly, I don't think I can narrow it down to one, but for sure, Anna Carter, Bailey Kaler, and maybe Riley.
Yeah, those were the three I was thinking of,
and maybe
too.
Addie Baker. Oh, yeah, they're all really funny, but
we have a funny team, I'd say. It's hard to just pick a few.
Very good. What have you learned playing in conference here at the Valley?
I just think, in general, playing series is kind of different than anything I've ever done before, even in high school or club. Like, usually you see a team once and you kind of move on. Maybe you'll see them in postseason, something like that. But just learning how to pitch to lineups that are going to see you, you know, that fifth time through the order on Sunday, you know, something like that. So just learning how to kind of make these minor adaptations to my pitching, I would say.
I'd say I've learned to, like, just to go one game at a time. I think it can be very easy to look ahead, especially when you have, you know, big goals at the end of the season, but just taking it one game at a time and not overlooking anyone, I think that's something that I've really learned this season.
A couple last things. I want you to describe your sister as the type of player they are. So, for example, Maddie, I want you to describe Rylan and what kind of catcher she is and how valuable she is.
Team-oriented, selfless, quiet and humble, competitor, honestly. Like, I'll give a brief example, but you brought up when she collided with our third base.
In the Sunday game against Belmont, yeah.
Yes, and so I was concerned. I'm like, are you okay? And she goes, yeah. And I'm like, oh, she's just pissed she didn't catch the ball right now. I'm like, she's just mad she didn't make that catch. And I could tell that's what was bothering her, just because I know her like that. But that's just a little example. Like, she doesn't care. She just got jabbed in the throat. She doesn't care. She just wanted to catch the ball.
Is that accurate, Riley?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I could tell. I'm like, she's mad right now.
That's pretty good. Well, now you gotta top that. Now, how would you describe Maddie the pitcher?
I'd say Maddie, she's very like calm in the circle. You know, she's not really super loud, but she lets her pitching speak for itself. She's very steady, and you know, you can look to her if anyone's like nervous or anything, and she's just very calm, and I think that's really reassuring. And her as well, very competitive. Like she just wants to win in any way possible. That's just her goal when she goes out there. And yeah, I'd say she likes the hard situations and wants the ball, and I don't think she ever backs down or is intimidated by any teams, whoever it is. But I think she goes about it in a very humble and a quiet way. And that's how I would describe her.
You both have been described to me as students of the game. Like, you both know how to think the game through, and to the point where, Maddie, for example, you've been described as a team could see you as many times as they do, but you actually get tougher to hit, which is tough to do. But yeah, that's because you're able to change it up on them, quote unquote. Just, is that accurate description there? How would you describe that side of things as far as being students of the game and being able to think through the game and being able to adjust and not be predictable, if you will? If you're facing one team like two or three times, you're able to change it up.
Yeah, I've always just felt more comfortable in the circle when I've done my homework and when I've put in the time to, you know my opponent. And I've never been one of those pitchers that can kind of just throw mechanically like a robot and just see the pitch, throw it. Like I like to kind of have a say and, you know, and my gut feeling on the batter at hand. And so that's just how I pitch the best, I think, is when I can think about it. And when, like I said, I'm not just robot throwing whatever I see on my wrist type thing.
It's pretty good. Who taught you how to pitch growing up?
Darren Dubsky. So he I cannot speak more highly of him. I still go to him when I go home over breaks and everything. He's the same pitching coach for Jordan Ball, Ruby Malin. So
it's pretty good.
Yeah, I got super lucky with that. He's just been amazing. You know, I text him and he'll give me little tidbits throughout the season. So yeah, all the praise for Darren. Yeah,
Rylan, who taught you catch?
Well, my catching coach was Tyler Goodrow. He was like an MLB coach, and now he's at Omaha, and he's one of the coaches there for the baseball team. But he really taught me all about framing, and I definitely wouldn't be the catcher that I am if I hadn't learned from him. And he completely changed the way that I frame pitches and present them. And so he's really taught me a lot with just, you know, how to steal strikes and stuff like that. So, yeah, Tyler Goodrow. Yep.
I was told that for the two of you, it was a goal and a dream to play together in Division I softball. Is that accurate? Was that like, that was the goal? Like, you were not going to be split up. You wanted to play together in Division I softball. Accurate?
So I would say we went into little naive juniors, went into the recruiting process, like, you know, wherever it takes us, like, let's not close doors prematurely type thing. But then as we were going through it, we're like, well, that would be crazy, right? Like, just kind of thinking it through, like, logistically, like, okay, so who are our parents going to go watch? Like, we're just going to be separate all the time. Like, it didn't feel right. So I think we went into it with an open mind, but quickly realized that probably wasn't the move.
Yeah, and we were also lucky enough that oftentimes it just happened that we were getting recruited together. So I think that also made us realize, like, okay, this is probably what's best for us, you know, on the field and off the field, so in both aspects. And we were lucky enough to have an opportunity to play together, and yeah, it just was what was best for us.
Fantastic. I'm glad it's worked out. for the two of you. Do you have goals after softball? Have you thought of that at all, what you want to do beyond softball? Or is that the furthest thing from your mind? I mean, I feel like you both might have stayed in the game afterwards, either way. Is that what do you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see my life without sports. So I have a feeling I'll stay around this game for quite a bit afterwards. But any specifics, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, not really sure what I want to do after softball, but I would be very shocked if I wasn't somehow involved in softball in some way, whether that's coaching later on or something like that. But yeah, I don't have any solidified plans or anything.
That's okay. You got plenty of time. Trust me, plenty of time. No worries. Enjoy it and enjoy. Good luck the rest of the year. Thank you so much for both of you to join us here on In the Circle on D1 Softball. I know it's a busy time with classes and obviously games going on with stretch run here, but you both have been fantastic and obviously been making some headlines there this season, and certainly we wanted to kind of tell your story, which I think is a fun story. So thank you for sharing your story. Send our best to Coach Sewell, and thanks for coming on to us and talking to us here on In the Circle on D1 Softball.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks again to DeGrasse for joining us. And thanks to Alec Runyon, Sports Information at Southern Illinois, for setting up that interview you just heard on our podcast today. Let's put these numbers in perspective for Medea Groff. 26-3. She is two wins shy of tying the single season record for wins in a season. She has been absolutely locked in since the opening weekend of the season. I saw her at the spring games in Leesburg, where Southern Illinois shut down Iowa and had two strong wins to start the season. And that was after Medea had that perfect game, the first one in Southern Illinois history. Medea on the season, I mentioned 26-3, a .75 ERA. I want you to understand, folks, this number that I'm going to give you. She has more wins, 26, than runs given up, 25. Again, let me state that number one more time. 26 wins, 25 runs allowed all season. And she has clearly become the number one on that Southern Illinois staff. And you got the veteran in Maddie Eberle, 8-6 with a .299 ERA. And with Rylan, her work has been behind the plate, being an absolute ace during the catching for the Salukis. 235 chances, zero errors. She is one of four Salukis with over 60 chances not to record an error this season. She's also thrown out five base runners this season. So Rylan doing the work behind the dish, supporting the Salukis at the dish. If Southern Illinois make the tournament, they need to win twice next week versus Murray State to get the one seed in the Missouri Valley Tournament. And of course, you know the Missouri Valley is always an entertaining and exciting tournament. If the Salukis get in, they are going to be a problem. Of course, Jackie List coming up, picking up right where she left off in her freshman campaign. She has 16 home runs on the season. And congratulations as well to Elizabeth Warwick. She is now the all-time leader in doubles in Southern Illinois history, banked a 50th double of her career in the fourth inning to have the program record, and became the first Saluki as well with 50 career doubles. And this is after last year, Warwick set the single season record for doubles with 19, and she's threatening that record again. She has 18 doubles entering the final weekend of the regular season. So, in all likelihood, Warwick will have another record on her mantle. Southern Illinois, 36-9. They are playing themselves to a 40-win season and will be a tough out should they make the NCAA tournament. Speaking of the NCAA tournament, when we come back to Inner Circle, Eric will rejoin me through the magic of podcast editing to talk about the results this weekend and how it could shape his bracketology, who could be in, who could be out, and how Eric Lopez nearly got smacked by a home run that got smacked by Kenzie Hansen. All that and more coming up in this episode of In the Circle on D1 Softball. Now, folks, I want everyone to listen to what I'm about to say. Coming up on our Thursday episode, we are going to make a big announcement. It's our first podcast in the month of May on this Thursday. And you know what we usually start talking about around that time. We have some news to share about that. And we are going to make that official on Thursday's episode of Inner Circle on D1 Softball. Speaking of podcasts on D1 Softball, y'all see Joanna Hart in Virginia do their thing this week. Getting a walk-off win on Sunday. You can hear Coach Harden talk with Jenna Becerra and Amanda Lorenz on the latest episode of the D1 Softball podcast that comes out Wednesdays, presented by S2 Cognition, wherever you stream your favorite podcast. Joanna Harden got a chance to talk about the Wahoos, the Cavaliers, that series win versus Duke, where they took 2 out of 3 versus the top 10 ranked Blue Devils, and how the Cavaliers are in position to make the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2010. And they picked themselves a couple of big wins this weekend to help bolster that resume. Joanna Harden on the latest episode of the D1 Softball Podcast. Listen to it wherever you get your favorite podcast. Now, before Eric joins me to wrap up what he saw in Orlando this weekend and recall his near-death experience with the K-9 long ball on Sunday, a couple of notes I want to share with the family before Eric joins us. First of all, Carly Spade once again doing Carly Spade things. She is now number 2 all-time in home runs. She surpassed Lauren Chamberlain during the midweek versus Eastern Kentucky. Spade for her career, 96 home runs. And by the way, Miami of Ohio as a team, 143 home runs, 19 away from surpassing Oklahoma's single-season home run record. Spade, 30 home runs on the season. She is 8 away from tying the single-season home run record on the D1 side. Congratulations to Carly Spade. By the way, check out our interview that Eric did with Carly Spade and her teammate Jenna Golombewski on our Inner Circle YouTube channel. We'll tweet out those links during Monday. By the way, Miami of Ohio, 3 players with 20 home runs. Spade, Golombewski, and Kei Kobayashi, 20 home runs, 56 RBIs. They have 7 players in double-digit home runs. Megan Bartholomew with 14. Allie Cummins with 14. Holly Blaska with 17. Sammy Buick with 11. And Holly Pearson, she has 7. So she has a chance to join that double-digit brigade to make it 8 Redhawks with double-figure home runs. And by the way, Karen Kumar this past weekend picked up her 100th career victory in the MAC as Miami clinched their 5th straight regular season MAC championship. We'll look to do more in the conference tournament in a couple of weeks. Meanwhile, previous guest and friend of the podcast, Casey Ricard, continues to do, well, Casey Ricard things. All she did this past weekend for Boston as they wrapped up another Patriot League series sweep, this time versus Lafayette. All she did on Sunday was throw a complete game, allowed 1 run, 3 hits, no walks, 11 strikeouts to improve her record to 23-3. And that's before she had herself her 14th shutout on Saturday in the series opener. That's 5 more shutouts than any other pitcher in the NCAA. She is the 2nd Terrier to reach 14 shutouts in a season, joining Audrey West, who reached 14 strikeouts on 3 separate occasions. By the way, did we mention Ricard has only allowed a grand total of 2 earned runs since Eric interviewed her 2 weeks ago and we've had her on the podcast? I'm just saying. We talked about Coach Harden in Virginia. They took 2 out of 3 versus Georgia Tech. We mentioned Coach Harden and Virginia. The Wahoos did their thing, took 2 out of 3 versus Georgia Tech. They're going to enjoy the week off and get ready for the ACC tournament next week in Durham. The Cavaliers 32-17, 15-11 in the ACC. Took series versus Clemson, series versus Duke, series versus Georgia Tech. If Virginia gets to the semifinals, I think that might be enough for the Hokies. I think that might be enough for the Cavaliers to get in. RPI is number 29 as of this recording. Strength of schedule is 13th in the nation. They only have one quad four loss. That's a loss of to a team that's 101 or below in the RPI. And we mentioned those impressive wins. 2 out of 3 versus Clemson. 2 out of 3 at Duke, which is very significant. Big beat. Notre Dame, 2 out of 3 in Notre Dame. And if you look at their non-conference, and if you look at what they did as well throughout the season, they beat Iowa State. They beat Lehigh twice. Lehigh will be playing Boston this coming weekend. We'll talk about that on Thursday's podcast to determine who wins the Patriot League regular season title and gets the one seed for the Patriot League tournament. If you're Virginia, you need to keep winning. Meanwhile, your Commonwealth counterparts, Virginia Tech, flushed the mouse this weekend, losing 2 out of 3 versus Syracuse on the road. Now, if you're Virginia Tech, the Hokies, I think, may need to win the ACC tournament. And I don't know if that's going to be enough for them to host, because look at what Virginia Tech has done. They lose 2 out of 3 to Syracuse, messing up what was an otherwise solid month of April. The only blemish they had in the month was at NC State, losing the opening game of the series. But they got swept by Duke. And Virginia Tech, that was a tough series loss for Virginia Tech. And I'm sure Eric will weigh that heavily into their bracketology. Now, Virginia Tech, their regular season is also complete. They got a midweek Wednesday at Liberty. They got a doubleheader on doubleheader Saturday versus a very pesky Robert Morris team before they get ready to start things in the ACC tournament in Durham. Louisiana, another year, another Sun Belt championship for the Raging Cajuns. They finish off winning another Sun Belt regular season championship by taking care of business this weekend versus Louisiana Monroe. Louisiana very quietly, number 14 RPI, 6th strength of schedule. The Raging Cajuns, and I'll talk to Eric about this on Thursday after his bracketology is released. When you compare the numbers of the Raging Cajuns this year to what the Raging Cajuns had last year that didn't get them to host. If the Cajuns cannot host with what I think is a better resume than last year's team that didn't get host, and to be perfectly honest with you, got jobbed, then I don't know what the other... If Louisiana isn't going to host this year with the resume that they have, presuming that they take care of business and win the Sun Belt Tournament Championship, then we should stop making non-Power 5 schools try and play challenging schedules. But, again, a lot of softball still to be played. And, again, look at Louisiana's resume. Beat Baylor. Of course, they got the massive win versus Oklahoma, snapping the Sooners' winning streak. They haven't had any bad losses since then. The only other loss they had was at Louisiana Tech in the midweek on March the 20th. Yes, they did lose a game at Texas State. They split versus LSU. That game that a lot of people felt that the Cajuns needed to win, they took it at home. They took care of business versus McNeese. Then they beat Louisiana Monroe. 5 wins for the Cajuns this week. They get Troy at home to wrap up the regular season before they go to San Marcos for the Sun Belt Tournament. So just some observations that I had. Also, before I forget, or before I bring Eric on, because he is patiently waiting in the background. Honestly, I'm giving him some more time after that near-death experience he had with that home run on Sunday. Can we show some love to St. Francis, the Red Flash? One of 2 undefeated teams in conference play this season, the other one being Boston. St. Francis, that machine, running roughshod over the Northeast Conference. They continue their mastery, 21-0 in conference, 34-12 overall. Are the Red Flashes doing it once again, sweeping Wagner this past weekend by a combined score of 16-2. They have Merrimack coming up to try to finish the regular season undefeated before the NEC tournament. And St. Francis, they have only lost one game since Patrick's Day weekend. That was a narrow 3-2 loss in Happy Valley this past Tuesday versus Penn State. Penn State going in the wrong direction, losing a series to Michigan this weekend. The Nittany Lions all of a sudden driving precariously close towards the bubble. But St. Francis, a phenomenal job by them. And when you look at St. Francis, they have held up, they played a very, very treacherous schedule. Lost twice to Penn State. We just mentioned the most recent meeting, losing 3-2. Lost twice to Liberty. All the three of those games are in Lynchburg. They lost two tight games to Central Arkansas. Lost to Chattanooga. Lost a one-run game to Nebraska in Fayetteville. Beat Nebraska when they ran it back again March the 9th. Lost a 2-0 game to Olivia Lackey in South Alabama. So if you see St. Francis in your draw, presuming they make the NCAA tournament this year, they are going to be a very frisky team that's going to give someone some toe roll. And I wouldn't be surprised if St. Francis won a game in whatever draw that they get. So just some observations that I have. Oh, well, I keep forgetting one more thing. One more thing for the one more thing. Congratulations to Jen Steele and Delaware. 37 wins for the Blue Hens, a program record for Delaware. They lead the CAA with one more weekend left to go in the regular season and became the first team in CAA history to reach 21 conference wins. It's actually nice to see them actually get to compete in the conference tournament, unlike their counterparts. Well, we won't go over the situation and the foolishness that happened with James Madison before they left the conference. Anyway, and anywho, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Eric Lopez, who had himself a front row seat and was nearly taken out of his seat Sunday. We'll get to that later, ladies and gentlemen. But a very action-packed episode already, sir. Before we get your thoughts on what you saw with Oklahoma, always good to talk to our friend Chris Plank. You got to see him in person this weekend with the Sooners visit to the City Beautiful, sir.
Yeah, it's good to see you. We got a lot of action-packed softball this weekend. It was pretty packed stadium. All three games. We can get into the stadium part of it if you want, Vic, a little bit. But from on the field standpoint, it was just a fun atmosphere. I mean, it was, for full disclosure, Sunday I didn't broadcast the game. They had Pam Ward, Jenny Dalton Hill calling the game, which was good to catch up with Jenny. Actually, I hadn't seen Jenny in a few years, but so I got a chance to be a fan for a change. It's the first time in like 5 years I think I've done that for a regular season game as far as home game. And so I sat in the stands, I sat in the outfield lounge, as you know, that gets a little wild there. And of course, I picked the game where there was like a lot of home runs hit by both teams.
Yeah, 11-7, and wow. And for what I read on your timeline on Sunday when I was preparing for the show, Kenzie Hansen hit a home run that almost ended this podcast as we know it. Explain, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hanging out with our friend Trace Trelko.
Yes,
UCF media person who actually I do around the kingdom with.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, friend with the podcast. And so I'm standing with him in the outfield lounge right center, whatever. Well, I can't tell because I'm in the outfield, whatever. So
somewhere in the outfield.
I think it was in the fifth inning when Hansen hit a driller, and the ball's coming towards where we're standing. Like, it's towards, you know, Trace is standing with a tree, and I'm like, I yell, Trace, get out of the way. We got to get out of the way. And that ball was like a missile, man. That was a ball that was drilled. And thankfully, he moved and I moved. Otherwise, that ball went to my right side, literally. If I don't move to my left, that ball's right at me, and it's right at him. So it probably would have hit both of us. And trust me, the way that ball was hit, was going, it was gonna do some damage to whatever part it hit me. So, because it's not like it was a pop-up. That was the interesting thing about being there in the outfield. It's not like it was like one of those where it's a high fly ball and it's out and you get to pop up in the air. It's like a missile coming for you, Victor, which almost happened to me. Remember, I hit that in the fall ball when we did the show from
Florida.
Jocelyn Erickson's home run. So I think they caught that one live, but I think when we were recording. So, yeah, the outfield. But it was packed, man. It was super packed in the outfield and certainly packed in the stands. And I think the big takeaway, Victor, you've been to that stadium. I've been to that stadium. That stadium got Bill Marshall 2006.
Y'all need to renovate that stadium. You need to expand the stadium. I mean, you can have facilities for football up the yin yang. Y'all can get new video boards for volleyball. But UCF softball is long overdue for some renovations, expanded seating. You're in the Big 12, UCF. Stop acting like you're still in the American. Expand the stadium.
I may go further back than that. I mean, that stadium, Vic, you know this. That stadium was built in March of 06, and it's not that different. Like, the same video board, scoreboard, I should say. It's not a video board. It's a scoreboard.
Which doesn't work half the time.
Something, yeah. Thankfully, it did this weekend, but you're right. Yeah, no, look, it's urgent. It needs to be done. And
like now.
I think it should have happened yesterday, last week, 2 years ago. It should have happened. And had a feeling, because you knew when I saw Texas and Oklahoma.
You're like,
oh, yeah, I knew. And, you know, people ask me, why didn't you do the broadcast? Well, there's no room in the box. And, you know, we're going to be a good host.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's literally,
being
in a press box, there's like, it's literally like an old school press box, early 1990s, early 2000s. There's the bigger room is where you have the operations people, like scoreboard, SID, music board, PA announcer. And then in the back, you have other people and possibly for media. And then on the adjacent sides in smaller rooms, on the right side is usually the UCF broadcast or ESPN broadcast in this case. And on the opposite side is the visitors radio, where Chris Plank was. And being in that press box numerous times, it's not exactly very spacious, so to speak. So, no. Y'all, UCF, whoever we need to talk to, and Eric, since you have the bigger clout of UCF than
not when it comes to that stuff.
Well,
because I've been saying this for a while. It's not like this is the first time I brought it up, trust me. And look, and like I said, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Which is interesting because UCF can get donations for a $100 million baseball stadium, and the baseball team has to sniff the postseason like the softball team has in the last 5 years.
That was Victor Anderson with his commentary.
Yeah, I said it. And it's true.
Is that a show? I feel like that's a segment. Is that a plug?
Catch it on YouTube. I may have a
more
plug. Spicy thought. There it is. By the way,
I totally agree. That's the big thing to me, and it's glaring. Because, look, the schedule, like, you're going to be in the Big 12 moving forward. It's not like this is going to be the last time. And there's a lot of interest.
With Arizona State, and Utah joining the league next season.
Correct.
I don't know if you're aware of this or not, UCF, but Arizona State, and Utah, they travel fans as well. So don't think this is going to be just some one-off with OU in Texas.
No, this was a hot ticket.
And don't forget when Oklahoma State gets added to the schedule to come to UCF. The Cowgirl Faithful traveled well when they had their trip to Clearwater, Stetson, and Tampa. They're going to travel in mass to Orlando as well. So this is not a one-off, UCF.
Correct.
They deserve it. They've earned it. Expand the freaking stadium, please and thank you.
There you go. So, so that was a fun experience, but it was fun games. You had a pitcher's duel. You know, me and Chris Plank broke it down there.
in the opening segment, and then they had the offensive shootout there. But UCF was right there with them.
They were.
And it was, you know, it was an exciting atmosphere. But it was fun to watch the players. It also was fun to see history. I mean, Tyari Jennings is now at the 300 RBR mark after her game on Sunday, joining that list of greats with the 300 RBI career mark, which I believe gets her – yeah, I think she's the seventh player now to be a 300 RBI. Sixth player, I believe, 300 RBI. But, of course, Saturday, she hit her 90th career home run. She hit one on Sunday, but she hit her 90th career home run on Saturday, which made her the eighth Division I softball player of all time in Division I history to hit the 90 home run mark. And I had a chance to talk to Tyari Jennings just before, right after the game on Saturday, to talk about that home run that she hit in her 90th. And, of course, oh, by the way, that was also win number 1,500 for Patty Gasso, becoming the third head coach in Division I history to make get that mark, joining Carol Hutchins and Mike Kondrea. So I asked Tyari Jennings about that, and here's the conversation that you probably saw on social media on D1 Softball. Eric Lopez here at D1 Softball with Tyari Jennings as the Sooners clinch the series against UCF in Orlando. Let's first talk about your 90th career home run. You're now one of eight Division I softball players to reach that milestone. Take me through that at bat and what that number means to you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously UCF, really good team, really good competitive pitcher on the mound. Just doing whatever I can to get a good hit, to get some barrel on the ball. Happened to turn out in my favor, but felt good off the bat, even better coming home to celebrate with my teammates.
It was a nail-biter, but you get Coach Gasso, her 1,500th win, one of three head coaches in Division I history to get 1,500 wins. What did it mean for you as players to get that win for her?
Yeah, she deserves the world and everything, so to be able to go on that field, fight for her, fight for his team, it's always fun to go to battle when she's on our coach. So she's done great things. It's definitely not the end, but I'm not surprised with all of her huge accomplishments.
Well, congratulations to you and your accomplishments and your team. That's Tyari Jennings. I'm Eric Lopez here for D1 Softball.
That was the video I did with Tyari Jennings. And yes, my hair was a mess because the wind was a factor. 20-mile-an-hour gust winds, folks. Not friendly for hair. And thank you to Brenna Johnson, who shot the video for me with Tyari Jennings, who was a magnificent person. And certainly thank her. And thanks to the Oklahoma folks for helping us set that up, Victor. So Oklahoma comes out of Florida still with a one-game lead on Texas with 1 week to go in the Big 12 standings. Bedlam is coming next weekend. That could certainly enhance the side, the Big 12 championship. Oklahoma State two back of Oklahoma in the standings. So the Big 12 title race to be decided, once again impacted by Bedlam. Texas will go to Texas Tech next weekend. UCF now will head to Iowa State, trying to move up. They're currently in the sixth spot in the Big 12. They're trying to move up to that 4-5 range there. So, but fun weekend, and certainly a salute to the UCF seniors. Shannon Doherty hits a home run in her last at bat at the Plex. Of course she does, right?
Of course she does.
Jada Cody and all that great seniors there. It was surreal, Victor. It was very surreal. Senior weekends are always. Mm-hmm. I can't believe we're at senior weekends already now.
Don't remind me. I'm going to go through that this weekend in the land with Stetson hosting North Florida for the regular season finale for the Stetson senior class. Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned Jennings reaching 300 RBIs. Here is the company she now joins. Sierra Romero with 304. Laura Espinoza, 315. Leah Bratz from Arizona, 322. Her teammate Jocelyn Allo with 323. And the woman who broadcasted Sunday's game where Jennings got the 300 RBIs, the all-time leader, Jenny Dalton Hill, then Jenny Dalton in Arizona, who had, oh, by the way, 328 RBIs. Can we start putting some respect on what Jenny Dalton Hill did in Arizona and the records that she still holds nearly three decades later?
I mean, I bow down to her when I saw her in my press box. Does that count?
We will allow it. Will allow it. Yes.
No, she's great. She's great. She was a great player. So what is that? Six players?
That is six players who have reached 300 career RBIs.
So Jennings is the sixth player to get to 300 RBIs, eighth player to get to 90 home runs. Pretty good career, don't you say?
And oh, by the way, that 90 home run list, let's talk about it. Jennings, Stacey Newman, Katiana Malga, Jesse Harper, Mia Davidson, Lauren Chamberlain, Carly Spade, who I highlighted before you came on, past Lauren Chamberlain.
Previous guest, by the way.
Previous guest, Carly Spade. You can watch that interview.
Only on this show, In the Circle, D1 Softball, Carly Spade. Check it back.
Welcome to the Carly Spade bandwagon. Of course, Jocelyn Allo. So, yes, that's the list. Two players have hit 90 career home runs this year. Jennings, Spade.
Pretty good.
And we've had both of them in some capacity on this show.
That's correct. It's pretty fortunate. Good stuff there. So a lot of fun there in Orlando with UCF and Oklahoma covering it this weekend. So we certainly thank Chris Plank, thanks to Ari Jennings there for being part of it. All right, Vic, let's wrap it up here. We got some other results here that you want to ask me about.
First of all, sir, what the heck happened in Westwood on Sunday? Arizona in the final ever meeting as Pac-12 foes between them and UCLA led 7-0 after the third, and it appeared that Arizona was going to get the final say-so in the most storied rivalry in all of college softball. But then the Bruins came back. They were down 7-3, and Palacio stepped to the plate and said Westwood into a frenzy. All on the Pac-12 network as the Bruins scored 11 unearned runs. I mentioned a 7
unanswered on runs. Yeah, unanswered. Yeah,
11 unanswered runs.
I mean, they might have been unearned. I have no idea, but they were definitely unanswered, unearned,
undisputed. They dominated. They won. They beat Arizona 11-7. Took 2 out of 3 from the Wildcats to take that series in Los Angeles. And now, Eric, my question for you, first for UCLA, how does this impact the Bruins' chances of trying to get themselves possibly a top 8 seed now that they take 2 out of 3 versus Arizona?
Well, I got them in my top 8 already, so I think they're in right there. Now, having beaten Stanford 3 games, take 2 out of 3 from Arizona, I think they're in that top 8 spot right now. And if they just continue to play well, they will, I think, maintain there. Arizona, crushing loss, could have won the series and really put yourself in the mix to host. I think that kind of takes it out for now. What a memorable game, though. I mean, the final meeting between UCLA and Arizona as conference rivals, as bizarre as that's to say,
yep,
that is reality. That was the last time they will ever play, at least in the regular season. I guess they could still play in the Pac-12 tournament, but they had the last meeting as members of the Pac-12. Remember, Arizona will be the member of the Big 12 next year, and UCLA is off to the Big 10. So, and as of now, there's no word, official word, if they will play. Now, the belief is that they will play, but whether, you know, in the regular season, maybe it's non-conference teams, but we don't know what that'll look like. We don't know if that's guaranteed to be next year. So, but what an atmosphere there for that final meeting between those two iconic programs.
Yeah, congratulations to ESPN and Fox on killing another rivalry.
All right.
In the sport of college softball.
Going after TV people.
Hey!
Another result, big result. Stanford wins 2 out of 3 at Washington.
Yes.
Vic, I think Washington now, and again, this is going to be really interesting because Washington's ranked very high in the human polls,
but
not in the metrics, not in the RPI. They're in the 20s in the RPI.
And the schedule is mid-50s.
That's the regular one. The non-conference is very soft.
145.
Remember the rainouts
yes,
in Clearwater. That yes, is really coming back to haunt
especially
them.
Especially the one with LSU.
Absolutely. I think Washington has to make a run to at least the Pac-12 championship game to have a shot to host. I really do, unless the committee just goes completely against history. The team that has the worst RPI that a team hosted as a one seed is 19, which happened a couple times. Notre Dame in particular, 2015 has done it. Georgia, I think, has done it. Right now, that Washington is not at that number. Had they won this series, they would have been right at that number. They did not. Now, they play Utah next weekend. They may need to sweep to just to stay within radar and then make a run at the Pac-12 tournament. Otherwise, yep, we may, for the first time since 05, we may only have two Pac-12 hosts in the NCAA tournament. Will stats, they've always had at least three. So that is a storyline to follow here over the next few weeks as they head to the final Pac-12 tournament in Stanford.
Yep, and of course Utah getting hot at the right time, trying to play their way into a...
Well, you say Utah hot. They lost 2 out of 3 to Oregon State.
Yeah, they were. They, I mean, they were hot, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, that after the win against Baylor, you're thinking, here we go.
And then,
but they lose 2 out of 3 to Oregon State. Now they got to play Washington. So I still will probably... Now, obviously, folks, as we record this, I haven't started my full press court...
Bracketology.
Updating the stuff. Not some dweeb that's just going to update it after each game, because everybody knows chaos happens in softball, so just wait it out. Play it out. Let the games play out.
Add Eric Lopez Elo, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, I was laughing at some people. Oh, I made this switch to this team. I'm like, okay, cool. That's great. Thursday. Can we check back on Sunday?
oh, my and God.
And that team didn't even make the field. By the way, probably not going to be in there. Anyway, so
wow.
I just laughed.
Wow.
I see.
But Eric, here's the thing with Utah.
I think.
But here's the thing with Utah, Eric. 43 RPI as of this recording. Strength of schedule, 64. You talk about Washington's non-conference strength of schedule. Utah's at .169 in the non-conference strength of schedule.
It ain't great. Not great.
I mean, they don't have any. They have good. They don't have any soul-crushing losses. One quad four loss on the season. But the winner of Utah-Washington this upcoming weekend will be in the best position for their situation. Utah to solidify their spot to make the tournament. Washington still with aspirations to potentially host in the NCAA tournament. But I think Washington needs this series, I think, for their cause more than Utah. Especially given the fluidity of the hosting bubble. I mentioned Virginia Tech losing 2 out of 3 to Syracuse.
Yeah, we would like to thank Virginia Tech for participating in the hosting consideration.
So you got them. You got them done, even if they win the ACC tournament.
I mean, you don't lose 2 out of 3 to Syracuse. You cannot lose 2 out of 3 to Syracuse. You can not at this point in the year. You cannot lose 2 out of 3 to my hosting staff. That is wild to me. Just wild.
Yeah.
What a wacky ACC year this continues to be. I mean, it's just been
and look who's gonna be standing at the top of the ACC in the regular season once again when it's all said and done. Lonnie Alameda and Florida State,
and they're probably gonna host.
Yep,
we'll see. A lot of softball to go.
They got
Florida this week, by the way, midweek in
Tallahassee. I think if they beat Florida again,
it's gonna be hard to deny. I agree, it's gonna be hard at that point. So we'll see how that goes, ACC style. That's the story there. And then, you know, SEC, Ole Miss, big weekend. 1-2 out of 3 against Auburn. They're in the mix. In the SEC, Tennessee took care of Alabama 2-3. Alabama, that was a big one. At least Alabama didn't get swept. I mean, they're probably going to host.
Alabama's going to host.
That seeding will be interesting. Interesting.
Eric, here's the thing. Alabama has been getting the benefit of the doubt from the committee the last couple of seasons, ever since what happened with them back in 2019.
Correct.
Here's the thing. Alabama has only won one SEC series.
That's unbelievable.
All season.
Unbelievable.
One SEC series win, and that's when they swept Ole Miss the first week of April, WrestleMania weekend.
That's right.
Now, here's the big series. They go to Auburn Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Final regular season series at home for Mickey Dean as Auburn head coach. He already announced that he'll be stepping down at the end of the season. If you're Alabama, you need to sweep that series to give yourself some more breathing room.
Well, at least win the series. Win the series. Now,
then it's really going to get dicey.
Because let's say I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think they're going to host. They're one of those that, okay, I got to see them not hosting to believe that they're not going to host.
Exactly.
Like, I didn't. But that doesn't mean they won't get a good. I they may get a 15. What if they get a 15 or a 16?
Are you sure about that? Are you sure?
We'll see what the metrics are. I had them at 14 my last week in bracketology. I mean, it's not like it's far off.
The committee always seems to give Alabama the benefit of the doubt the last couple of years.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'm just saying, it's in play where they could end up facing Oklahoma or Texas in the Supers, and boy, that won't be pretty.
No,
that won't be that pretty.
All I gotta say, just think of it as a preview for when Oklahoma and Texas join the SEC next year.
Wow.
Woo. Yeah, anyway. Said it. By the way, Auburn, 7-14. They played the number one strength of schedule in the nation. So Auburn, I think, is fine. But
yeah, they'll make the tournament. Yeah, they're in the tournament, but I don't think they can host. I mean,
I don't have them. No, I don't have them hosted. I think Auburn might
losing Ole Miss. Really, if they would have won the old swept Ole Miss, and let's say win the Alabama series, that might have been interesting because they could have flipped it. They might have flipped the Alabama schools hosting, but I don't know. Losing Ole Miss, I don't know. We'll see.
Speaking of Ole Miss, 28-23, they go to Arkansas.
Still a lot of work to do there. Yeah,
I think. Let me put it to you this way. If you go if you're 28-27, if you get swept by Arkansas, you lose that opening round game in the SEC tournament. Which as of this recording, it will be a rematch between Ole Miss and Auburn in that 12-13 game, that play-in.
Yep.
And Auburn, as you referenced, just swept them.
Well, Auburn lost them 2 out of 3.
I'm sorry. It's been a long weekend for me, ladies and gentlemen, because every time I see something, I think of sweep. I was doing beach volleyball, and the team that won North Florida swept their opponents to the conference championship. So my apologies if sweep is on the brain for me. But still.
So we'll say, that's not what you – I don't think that would be ideal for Ole Miss at all.
And this is why
I have them out. Now, I don't know if I will have them out later this week or not. I have to look at all the – I don't want to say one thing or the other.
But this is why Ole Miss winning that series versus Auburn was huge. Because
Keep them in the mix.
Because let's say if they had lost two out of three, they're 27-24. If they get swept at Arkansas, they would have needed to have won that play-in game to keep themselves in consideration. Now they got a little bit of buffer, but I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Correct. 100% agree. So we'll see. A lot of it's an interesting year from that standpoint. The bubble. Tennessee did what they had to do. They won 2 out of 3. I think they're the best team in the SEC.
Yep.
Florida wins the series at Georgia.
Huge win for Florida. Huge.
I just don't see – Florida has to host, right? Like, I just – what do I – I mean, they won a series.
It's kind of like Alabama. We saw last year Florida did not host. They had to travel out west to Stanford.
Correct.
But I think this Florida team has a much stronger resume.
Heck yeah. They won 2 out of 3 at Alabama. Won 2 out of 3 at Mississippi State. Won 2 out of 3 at Georgia.
Beat UCLA at Fullerton.
Fullerton's not as good this year, but you beat UCLA. They've got the wins. They won 2 out of 3 against LSU. So I think Florida is a host. What seed that is, I don't know. But, again, I think they're
It goes back to that Wednesday game in Tallahassee, Florida State. The winner definitely increases their hosting chances.
For sure. All right, anything else before we sign off?
No, sir.
Indiana lost to Wisconsin. No bueno. 2 out of 3 to the Badgers. That really dicey, their Big Ten. I think Michigan took a massive step and almost being a lock to be in there in the Big Ten. Indiana's in trouble. Oh boy, that's Team 64. Whoever you are,
good luck.
There
are various years that I do not that I envy the committee. This is one of those years that I don't. Good luck figuring out 61, 62, 63, 64 because this bubble it is absolutely chaotic.
Yeah, so no doubt we'll see how that goes. But all right, we both had long weekends. You were doing beach volleyball championships,
yes,
all weekend. I was out at the complex, UCF Oklahoma, called Friday Saturdays, observed, covered the Sunday game. We're both a little beat up, but it was good. Sooner Sean was with me, but Sooner Sean said hello. He wishes you well.
Yes,
he got to catch. It was his first ever 3 softball games he ever got to attend in person.
Bravo.
The Sun beat him up pretty good. Let's just leave
it. I'm not surprised.
But it was fun, man. It was fun atmosphere. I always love. I always get very melancholy, you know, tough emotionally because of senior weekends.
Before we sign off, Mark, I want to personally say on the airway, my congratulations, sir, to you. This past week, you had your 600th broadcast as the voice of UCS softball. So I want to extend my congratulations to you on the podcast.
I'm old. Means I'm getting old. I've been there a while.
Well, hey, I mean, you've been doing a good enough job. They haven't asked to get rid of you yet, so.
Thank goodness. Yeah, I had a lot of OU fans, like, complimenting. Thank you. Thank you for the OU fans.
And see Eric, OU fans are nice people.
Yeah, I always said they were. Fang Nye, those, I mean, they're my boy people, man. They're my people. When Blair was out in Japan.
Yeah, don't let
there's
them.
There's a lot of good OU. Yeah, like I said, there's a minor percentage. That, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, everybody is what it is. But listen, it was fun. And like I said, it was great. Generally, it was great to see Chris Plank, who does a phenomenal job.
The best.
I got to see it. Like, I sat in a booth, man, with the equipment. I mean, he's got all these commercials, promos, you know, live ads. Wait. And here's what he did, okay? So, Oklahoma wins the Saturday game. 2-1, 1,500th win. He's got a wireless mic with a headset. He races to the field and gets Patty Gasso live on his radio broadcast right away to get a reaction on the win and the milestone. Like, I'm like, this guy can do it all. It's just unbelievable.
And that is why I consider Chris Plank the best in the business. Because of that.
Yeah, I got to get an argument for me on that. So he was doing stuff, great stuff, and he was very appreciative. Although he did not enjoy the fact he ran into a. You want to tell?
So Chris Plank was out on his evening walk Saturday,
yeah.
And he got greeted by a gator. I don't know if it was a Florida gator. I don't know.
Maybe next year. Yeah, next year.
If it was like a little preview. Like, hey, Chris, looking forward to seeing you in the swamp next year. I don't know if Kyle Crooks or Skylar LeBron sent that out there. But, Chris, Eric and I want to let you know personally, neither of us had anything to do with that gator Saturday night.
Anybody that's followed this show for a long time knows I've had plenty of experience with gators already.
We both have.
Both of us collectively,
Eric and myself, have been to pretty much every trip UCF has made to Florida in the postseason. And I think I speak for Eric and I say we have had enough.
Yeah, although I wouldn't – I mean, if we go there in a couple of weeks, at least I got friends there. It's fine. But,
yes, you do.
No, it was fun. It was good to see Chris. Good to hear from, obviously, Tari Ginny. Great to hear from the Groff sisters. How much fun were they? Maria Groff and her twin sister, Rylan Groff.
As
you mentioned during the show, they dominated again this weekend.
I highlighted their numbers, what they did versus Indiana State again.
A top 25 finalist for Freshman of the Year, by the way, Maria.
Yes. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, if it ain't her or the kid from Florida State, then there should be a investigation on the voting process. But
they're a dangerous team to watch. Southern Illinois on top of the valley there. And the Gensel's doing a great job. And thanks to the folks at Southern Illinois for setting us up with them earlier this week, prior to that series this weekend. So
I've noticed there people that we've had on the podcast have been doing pretty well. Groff from Southern Illinois.
This is the place to be.
Ricard from Boston. Another shutout for the Terriers. Reese Atwood from Texas. We heard you fans all the way back in January.
I had fans from OU. They're like, "Hey, is Victor with you?" Like, you know, he's busy doing baseball.
I'm a man in demand. What can I say? I got another busy weekend. The Pull It Down Tour. We're making our final regular season stop.
Right. He is.
Well, you and I
need to talk about that off the air.
We may need to.
Are we making us a return trip to DeLand, maybe?
Are you sure you want me to be? Are you sure you want to hang out with me in DeLand the day I got on Saturday?
Oh, good point.
Thank you.
Anyway, on that note, let's go ahead and wrap up the show.
Thanks again to the Groff twins for joining us. Thanks to Chris Plank, the voice of the Sooners of Oklahoma softball, for joining us. Thanks to you,
Jari Jennings
as well. Thanks to the Pac-12 Network for that sound we heard from the Palacios home run. Big announcement we're making on Thursday about some of our postseason coverage and when we're going live. So be on the lookout.
You may have gotten a hint in the Plank interview. Close.
Yes, Easter egg, kids. Easter
egg. There you go, Easter egg. Yeah.
So for everybody, and for Eric Lopez, I am Victor Anderson. We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Inner Circle on D1 Softball. Top podcasters out. Good night, Canada.